Hello and welcome to the Parents Survival Kit, where our mission is to help you go from surviving to thriving in your household. My name is Gene Schwelen, and next to me is my beautiful bride, as always, pediatric psychologist expert, Dr. Sonia Schwelen, nationally certified school psychologist. And we are going to dive into the episode number two of Unplugged. If you missed last week, go and check it out. Unplugged part one, life or death. Today is Lost in New York. And then next week, we're going to have episode number three, the final episode of the Unplugged series called Cyberbullying and Sexting. So you don't want to miss any of these very important information. We do want to make sure that everyone is aware that we are going to have some gut-wrenching examples and some things that parents really don't like to think about when it comes to our kids and really, you know, things they're exposed to and experiencing in everyday life. Some things we can't control, but a lot of it we can. And that's why we're here today, to help us take control of devices, social media, internet, gaming, and all the things included. So it's Lost in New York. So Dr. Schwelen, what does that mean, lost in New York?
All right. So this is actually something I picked up from a really good friend of mine. And ever since I heard her describe the use of the internet and just devices and all of that to parents one day, I just could not let this example go. So I use it too, and that's kind of cool. We all like to help each other out in our field. And she's a genius psychologist as well, so she definitely gets credit for this. But lost in New York, I like to have parents think about, and this example really only works if you're not from New York, so let's just play along for a minute.
Well, that depends.
okay, all right, maybe you can help out with that in a second. But let's pretend you're on vacation and you take your child to New York City. It is the first time that your child has ever been to the city, and you're riding along in a cab, and all of a sudden, at a light, you ask the cab, go ahead and pull over. You turn to your child, and you say, hey, go ahead and get out. Have fun exploring.
See you tomorrow.
Maybe I'll see you later. Would you ever let your child go roam the streets in New York City alone?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
And being that I spent a lot of time in New York City as a kid, as a teenage kid, I can definitely tell you that there's definitely things that you can see that you don't want your kids to see that, I mean, honestly, adults want to see. And then when we were talking about this episode and calling it Lost in New York, you know, you can even go back to the Home Alone, you know, 2 and whatnot, and what that kid went through running through the streets. But that's really nothing compared to really what we're trying to paint the picture of. In fact, so when I was thinking about that today, I was like, okay, lost in New York. Let's even like go bigger and deeper than that. What about lost in Amsterdam or lost in Prague on the streets at night? What are they seeing? You can't miss, from what I hear, I've never been there, but I've got friends that have been, and you can't miss what goes on there that you don't want to see.
You're talking about like the red light district.
The red light district and all that. Yeah, absolutely. So,
okay. So those are great examples. So the reason that I bring that up is if you wouldn't let your child roam the streets of New York City or Prague or Amsterdam at night, right? Why are you okay with letting your child explore the World Wide Web right at their fingertips when you hand them a device, completely unsupervised and with no roadmap in sight?
Yeah, and that's a very good point. And as we talk more and more about, you know, addictions and internet and whatnot, nowadays it's even, there's so much even more to be concerned about outside the internet. You've got games where, I mean, our 7-year-old, when she was 5, was, you know, coming home from her mom's house, and she was playing Roblox, which is what you would think would be a kid-friendly game, but there's other people playing. Some of these people are adults, and they're chatting on these games and whatnot. So there's so many different areas and different arenas. Internet, now it's social media, it's games, it's everywhere where there's live interaction from the entire world that can tap into any market, any game, anything, anytime.
Yes, exactly. And so today's really about, you know, we called it Lost in New York because of that example of, you know, no parent from safety perspective would be all right with letting their child roam the streets blindly in a big city. And essentially that's exactly what we're doing when we're not monitoring them using their devices. So device safety is such an important thing and something that we all need to do as parents in terms of educating our children, supervising them, and like you said last episode, really trying to stay on top of things because technology is changing so fast. There are new apps coming out every day, and having some tools available to us as the parents to do what we can to keep our kids safe.
Absolutely. And kids, as we talked about last episode, kids will always be way ahead of the game when it comes to technology than we ever will be. And so we just have to really make sure that we're doing everything we can to really help our kids in the right way. You mentioned, training wheels and whatnot. And when we're teaching our kids how to ride a bike, we have training wheels with them and we're right beside them because they're still not stable and they may fall off. And, as we take those training wheels off, we're holding the bike and running down the side of the street with them and they're every part of the way. And then once we let them go, we are still monitoring them for a period of time. So there's a lot of stages that we need to talk about today when it comes to monitoring and whatnot when it comes to devices.
Yeah. And so one of the questions I get a lot from parents in clinic, or it's not even a question, it's just like a concern that they bring up frequently. A lot of it is just feeling overwhelmed. I mean, understanding apps and technology can be really hard for parents. Maybe they've been on a computer all day at work already and they just don't care about looking at another screen when they get home. Sometimes it's a lot easier to just hand the device over and, we've made the reference to the nanny tablet and all of that. And so it's hard to even think about yet another thing that needs my attention and energy, right? So I do get those concerns and they're so common and so normal. Other concerns I frequently hear are things like, isn't that an invasion of my child's privacy? Have you ever thought about that? Like when you've thought about monitoring any of the kids' devices?
I haven't, but I have parents of kids that I've coached in sports and, they have mentioned comments like that and we do hear it. And it's really important to understand that, it's our job as parents to really be instructing and guiding our kids through all that we do. And so there really is no privacy. I remember as a young kid growing up and the telephone was plugged into the wall and, you had these long cords, and then we did have the cordless phones that came out at some point in time and whatnot. But I remember I'm on the phone with a friend and all of a sudden, and it was really actually more funny with my sister. She was 4 years older than me. So, I used to get a kick out of it because she'd be on the phone nonstop, and then my mom or dad would pick the phone up, and I'd hear her screaming, "I'm on the phone!" and like yelling at mom and dad. And
my favorite is when my mom would just pick up the phone and not even listen for a dial tone, and she would start dialing while I was talking to a friend, right? And so you're hearing all the keys push and the buttons pressing, and it's so frustrating.
Yeah.
Because you can't say anything until she's done dialing. And then as soon as she puts the phone back up to her ear. Well, because the phone's
down here, she can't hear it, right?
You're like, wait, I'm on the phone.
Well, and I remember also I'd try to walk into my sister's room and sit there with her when she's on the phone and, or I'd be at the door and I could see, I can hear shoes being thrown and whatnot. I need my privacy.
Right.
Leave me alone.
Right. And so you could listen in, so the point is, there's no such a thing as privacy when we have kids.
Well, okay? We never had it.
And so. I like saying that. I like being kind of extreme when I say that because even as they get older and, they're dealing with more sensitive things in their life, there's still no privacy. They are your child. Moms, you gave birth to that little thing that lived inside of you. Or if you've, adopted your kids, you were up all night with that child. You did everything you could to make sure they stayed alive and were fed and all of that. So you changed their diapers. I mean, come on. There's no such thing as privacy when it comes to you and your children at this point. So I just want parents to understand we're getting rid of that concept of being afraid of invading your child's privacy.
Well, and I want to point out to dads, as a dad with my kids, I am a protector. If somebody said something that was, off the wall, terrible or did something bad to my child, you better watch out because I will go to jail for my kid if I had to. And I say that because my job is to protect my kids in all ways possible. I am the protector. And if parents really knew what was being said to our kids in different types of gaming apps, different types of internet apps, social media apps, If a kid said that to our kids at school, we'd be in that school tomorrow, if not today. We'd want those parents there at that school, and it would be a serious, serious issue. And worst thing that we'll ever hear at school is happening every single day with our kids online and being and what they're being exposed to.
Yep, and that's true. And so, you know, we need to be aware of what those things are. So today we're going to talk about just different threats online. So you want to say something?
I was going to say, so let's jump into it. So let's talk about online predators. I mean, that's
exactly where I was going. So we want to talk about online predators. I think a lot of people hear about online predators, or even another real buzzword right now is child and human trafficking. But what does that really mean? What does that look like? And so understanding, you know, there are a lot of investigations that are going on right now. There are entire units and task forces and organizations that dedicate time, money, resources, and efforts on internet predators, because it is so, so scary and so real and happening in our own backyard.
Yeah, and if you really look into some of the research that's been done, there are task force, as you mentioned, that are uncovering different types of, I mean, actual like entities that are actually out there, creating predator platforms and whatnot. And they're moving from city to city also in different parts of the world. And it happens all the time. And it's a real big deal.
Yeah. So one of the things I want to talk about today is understanding the concept of grooming and being groomed. And so essentially what that means is that an online predator, first and foremost, can have access to your child through really, just areas of the internet that you would be least suspecting. So, you know, common areas where we know that predators lurk are on multi-gamer chat rooms. They can also be in different on social media apps. In fact, we can talk about one of the more recent social media apps that has come about just in 2019, where its goal is to promote talking to strangers and teenagers and younger kids when they're feeling lonely or like they just want some answers and they have no one to talk to, can go to apps like this and get some attention and be focused on just by talking to a stranger.
Yeah, and there's a lot to uncover here. So some of these things we're going to talk about is going to be, again, it's going to be a little bit gut-wrenching. So, but I think we need to all take the approach to this episode that this can happen to your child. You are not protected no matter where you live, no matter, you know, what church you may go to or whatnot, no matter what circle of influence you have and whatnot, your kids are being exposed. No matter what school they go to, if they don't have a cell phone in your household at whatever age, their friends at school have a cell phone, and they're being shown things, they're being taught and told things. So this is really, really important.
Yeah, and even when they go over to friends' houses, you know, you might have rules and boundaries around device use, but those same rules and boundaries may not be in place at the friend's house. And so I always tell parents, you know, it's totally okay to start having that conversation with your child's friend's parents. Hey, what are the rules at your house? Who is supervising uses of devices? What kind of games do your kids play? Because you want to know that kind of stuff before you even allow your child to go over to someone else's house these days.
And even letting the other parents know exactly what your boundaries are and what you prefer and whatnot. And if their response will tell you if it's safe for them to go over there or not. So we talked about last episode that the whole effect of devices and exposure and threats that are out there, it's getting worse and worse as each year goes by. So I want to give a really quick stat that is, you know, very, very gut-wrenching also as a dad, especially with two little girls that are so precious, but even with our boys as well, because this changes, and we see it in kids and teenagers today as well. But in 2017, the average age a kid was exposed to pornography was age 11. In 2019, just last year, that average age went down from 11 to 7 to 8 years old, and it's changing each and every year. So if that doesn't tell you how important this stuff is, we need to wake up as parents and understand that we got a big job in front of us and something we should take very seriously.
Yeah. So So basically, I want to touch on what you just said, and then I want to go back to that definition I was trying to give of grooming, because I know I kind of left it hanging. But it's not just, you know, on accident that kids are stumbling across pornography. It's not that someone showed it to them. It's also because kids are curious. So there's more and more kids that are signing up to be on dating apps, for example, or that are clicking little pop-ups that come, you know, in the app that just looks kind of interesting or popped up. And so they clicked on it. It took them down a path that brought them to a pornography site. And so some kids are stumbling on it. Some kids are seeking it out because they're curious and they have access to it so easily. And they're visiting, you know, adult sites because they might have questions about sex and romance, and parents are not having conversations enough with their children about those topics, or not realizing that they have to start having those conversations much earlier.
Younger and younger.
And so then kids are going to the resource, you know, the Google resource or whatever they can find on an app, and they're finding out for themselves.
Well, and there's all, as you mentioned, there's all kinds of pop-ups. But what is also important to really understand with the curiosity point with kids and whatnot, kids are very curious. And when they have, when they're playing, again, different types of games, they have other people playing those games of all ages. I mean, old adults are playing these games too and suggesting things. And sometimes in the forums, they'll see the same people over and over and over again. Additionally, if we think about our kids on a device, with the amount of time that a lot of kids are spending on devices today, each and every day, a kid gets bored with this game after a while, or even in that same day, and they're trying to explore and find other things just out of curiosity because they want to find something different and something new. That happens all the time. And then even in that Google research and just trying to find things, they stumble across things and whatnot that leads them down a bad path.
Right. And so it is very risky. And that's why, you know, we need to be really proactive. And one of the best ways to do that, parents, is for parents to really understand what those risks are. So there's obviously access to pornography and sexual content and just things that can be really disturbing to know that our kids have access to, or things that we might not want our kids to have access to so early on. And then there are the predators that are online. And those are, I think, they're similar topics, but they can be separate sometimes too. So with apps like Omegle, that's the one we were talking about, with apps that encourage kids to talk to strangers, it is so easy for a child to go in. You know, we actually tested this out just today. We typed in, you know, Omegle. We went in. We wanted to talk to a stranger. I actually typed in, I want to talk about self-harm.
Well, and actually really quick, this is a really important point right here. So there was a kid in clinic that brought this up just yesterday that we have never heard of. And so Dr. Swin,
the app, we'd never heard of the app.
Right? Yeah, the Omegle app. So what's actually kind of funny, but not even funny at all, is that we're actually doing this together because this research we want to do together, husband and wife, and not do it individually, and knowing where our boundaries are as well. And it's very important for parents to understand that and talk about that as well, because this is some really serious stuff. But she said, type in, and she thought it was called Amigo. So we typed in Amigo, like, you know, Hispanic. Hey, Amigo. And even when we typed up Amigo chat, okay, it brought up, if I didn't click enter, just Amigo chat, it brought up Omegle, talk to strangers, the second one down. That tells you how many people are searching Omegle chat, talking to strangers. Omegle came up right there when I put in Amigo chat. I mean, right. Not even spelled it right. Omegle, just in case parents, you don't know, is Omegle.
Right.
So not even close to Amigo.
Right.
So.
And so then at that point, we're like, okay, it's asking us, what do we want to talk about? So I said, go ahead and type in self-harm, because it is my understanding that a lot of teenagers will go in and type in real specific topics because they're either thinking about self-harming or just other things related to maybe feeling depressed. And that's a whole other episode that we can talk about, you know, in the future. But they'll go out and seek people to talk to about these things. And so I just said, type that in and see what happens. Then there was an option to either select chat text or video. And so we didn't want to be on video, so we decided to text only. And then it kind of took us into a chat room, immediately we were introduced to a stranger. Immediately the stranger left the room because we took too long to say anything.
Because we're like, oh my gosh, that was quick. And what do we say? And what do we do? I mean,
so it was about two or three times that the stranger
third
entered
time's a charm.
And left because we were too slow. And then we were ready. And so we typed real fast, like hello or something like that.
So I was doing the typing and I'm trying to also type like a kid. So this is very important to understand as well. I'm trying to type like a kid would as far as like how I'm writing words. I'm using you, the letter U for you, instead of spelling it out. And kids these days, they have all types of, you know, abbreviations they use that I don't even know half of them. But anyway, long story short, after about five, like, you know, hi, how are you? Immediately they asked if I was a boy or a girl.
Right.
And I said girl. Okay. Because I can be anything I want to online. And so can they. Yep. And so I said, and you? And they said, boy, where are you from? Is what the next question was to me. I said, New York. Didn't want to tell them that I was actually from Idaho.
Because we were lost in New York today. So that was our episode, right?
That's right, exactly. And then I'm actually trying to type, you know, like the next question, and I'm looking down at my keyboard because I'm not a very good typer and some, you know, just a, you know, anyway. And before I could even look up, she's saying, did you just see that? And the actual, whoever we were talking to, the stranger said, horny, ? I mean, in the first 20 seconds, it's already going there. And that happens all the time.
Right. And so then we didn't respond, and I said, what do we do? Oh, my goodness. And then eventually I just said, thank you for the data. Have a nice day. And we disconnected. But the point is, my heart was racing. I was uncomfortable. I felt so triggered because all I could go to was, this took 20 seconds. And all we had to do was Google it. There's no warning that pops up. There's nothing that would even make your child hesitate in that situation to like think, wait, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? And 20 seconds later, they're being asked, you know, questions about, you know, engaging in some kind of sexual conversation.
Yeah. Well, and what, go ahead, I'm sorry.
So that was really, really quick, you know? So that's actually not an example of grooming. I mean, it could be, It might be if there was a true child on the other side that said, you know, what does that mean? I don't know what you're asking me. And then the predator might say something to describe what that means and then explain even further. And before we know it, your 8 or 9-year-old child is hearing about what sex is for the first time ever from a complete stranger online. And you have no idea what version of sex that they've just heard about because the stranger is going wherever they want to go with it.
Yeah. And there's, you know, there's a video that you used to show that you shared with me, and we're going to try to research this and put it on our Facebook page and also in the comment section below. But long story short, there's a 20-something-year-old, I'm going to give you just the really vague version, but there's a 28-year-old guy that did a study where he's actually reaching out to girls through Instagram.
Well, first he reaches out to the parents.
Yes. Right? So, yes, he's actually getting permission from the parents. It's kind of a test case study, okay? So he's doing a case study, and he gets permission from the parents. So then he's reaching out to these young girls. I mean, and their average age was anywhere from 12 years old to, like, 18 years old, but usually 12 to 16, but really 12 to 14. And he's meeting them through Instagram. So, I mean, sometimes within the matter of 15 minutes, he's got a date set up with them to where they're agreeing to meet. And actually, a lot of times, they're actually saying, yes, you can come pick me up at my house. And so one in particular case was, I'm not sure exactly, I think she was 13 or 14 years old. My parents are leaving tonight at 7 o'clock. You can pick me up at 7:30 or whatever not. Here's my address. They only spoke for just literally 15 to 20 minutes that same day. And so he pulls up to the house after parents have left. He pulls up in this white van where it has sliding doors, okay? So it's like one of those old school, like, terrace vans with sliding doors. There's no windows, literally, in the video. There's no windows in the sliding doors in the back. The only windows you have is the very front window and then the driver's side and passenger door window in the front, okay? And it's parked right in front of the house. So he goes to the front door, knocks on the door. She answers the door. She walks out with him. He leads her to the van. And he doesn't open up the front passenger door for her to get in the front passenger door. He opens up the sliding door that has no windows, and she goes and gets in. that easily. I mean, just like that. Now, when she gets in the van, of course, her parents are sitting in the van, and they start freaking out. But it's just really important to understand that, that's how easy it really is for predators who know what they're doing. And this happens all the time. Our kids are online chatting, and they meet a friend as an example. Again, it's a friend, but it's really not a friend. It's a stranger. And they'll start communicating. So you talked about grooming. So right. You'll have interaction going on, conversation. Hey, what school do you go to? Oh, really? Oh, I go to this school. What's your mascot? And they'll start asking certain questions. What's your mascot in? Oh, really? Do you ride the bus or do you walk home or do your parents pick you up? You know, my parents pick me up, and I really wish they did. I'd rather ride the bus home. So they're actually giving answers and asking questions and providing their own answers and trying to lead them down a way. But what they're doing is they're able to find out exactly where your kid lives at based on the school, the mascot, and everything else. What if you ride the bus, you know, what's your bus number? My bus number is this. What bus number you have? They can find the bus route now. They know, hey, so are your parents home whenever you get home from school? Do you have to sit at home for hours by yourself and get your own snacks and whatnot? They're finding out when parents are home and not home, and they can come and take your kid anytime they want to, and it happens all the time.
And the child doesn't know any better. They think they're talking to another child their own age because the conversation feels like they're talking to another kid.
Absolutely. And that's kind of the things that we have to be concerned about with talking to strangers and whatnot online. You mentioned Omegle and whatnot. There's a lot of kids these days that are really hurt in different ways. You know, parents are working a lot. They're depressed. They have tons of anxiety. And they may even have a good circle of friends as well. But sometimes they don't want their friends to know some of the things they're actually going through. So they do reach out online to ask questions and whatnot. And you have people on the other side that are really playing with them to see what they will actually, how far they'll go in certain areas and whatnot too. And that's very, very dangerous.
Right. And so, you know, in the clinic, when we talk about this with parents will say, you know, my child feels like I don't trust them when I bring this up. You know, my child is so convincing that, no, these are really my friends and I'm not stupid. Do you think I'm stupid? I know not to trust everybody, or I know not to give out my address. And so kids and parents have such a huge conflict over this, because parents will say, I'm not trying to convey to my child that I don't trust them. I'm trying to convey to them that I don't trust the world, right? And kids will internalize that and see it as, my mom thinks I'm so stupid. Like, I know I'm not supposed to give my number out to someone. And so that's often the conflict that I see by the time someone comes to my office for help. And so my response to that really is, again, this isn't about privacy. This isn't about, you know, thinking someone's dumb or stupid or whatever. It goes back to that training wheel example, you know, that you mentioned earlier, that anytime our kids start something new, we need to start off with them in a very developmentally appropriate way. We're not going to put our kid on a full-grown bike and say, good luck, start pedaling. I mean, you could, but you don't really want to do it that way. You want them to have a good experience, right? You're not just going to take them and, like, dump them in the pool and hope that they'll swim. No, you're going to set them up to drown and flail and really have a hard time. You want them to have a good experience. And so the appropriate way to even introduce devices and cell phones and gaming and all of that is with the exact same approach. You're kind of there with your child in the beginning, and then you walk them through different stages of becoming increasingly independent over time.
Yeah, absolutely. And it also requires a lot of communication, boundaries, structure, and setting limitations. I mean, right. We want to set proper limitations, and kids really thrive in those areas. They may rebel and reject because that's what kids do, but ultimately they really enjoy that. So just being aware of what they're wanting to do and giving, you know, just different types of, you know, rewards, you know, for things they're doing.
Right. So I want to actually break that down. Okay. So, like, real life examples of how to do this. So last week we said, you know, go and just observe. So, I mean, that's really one of the most important steps is first understand where are we at with this whole technology thing and this device use, and how out of control is it really? And you might find that it's completely out of control because that's actually the norm these days. And other families might find, no, we've always been involved. Our children know that we can look at their phone at any time, and it's a very normal thing for us to do that. So in whatever category you're in, there's always ways that we can improve, right?
And it's also just, you know, let's be honest too, that for most of us, it's out of control and we don't even know it.
Yeah.
Because we talked about even just with our 17-year-olds and things right. we had to do, and we still have boundaries around his phone use and whatnot, and when he can actually have his phone. He's not even allowed to have it at night still to this day.
Right.
And it's been many, many months and whatnot. So finding out where you're at is important. And it can be corrected, and we can have some corrective experiences, but it takes a lot of work.
Yep. It takes a lot of work, intentionality, and involvement. And so it's not easy. It's not going to happen overnight. And just be ready, because there might be some emotional breakdowns. There might be more conflict and tension in the parent-child relationship. And I'm going to say it's worth it. It needs to happen. This is that battle that you want to pick, right? So I, you know, if your child is young, you can start, you know, the younger you start, the better. But this works even when your child is older and has grown accustomed to having unlimited access to their devices. It's a little bit different, you know, because a younger child is not going to necessarily be used to having unlimited access. They kind of have to come to you maybe and say, can I have the device? Where is it? Where'd you put it? Can you turn it on for me? Things like that. Whereas an older kid might keep it in their room all the time. So, you want to start off by letting your child know, you know, just like riding a bike, I'm going to be involved. I'm going to be here until you're able to really develop good critical thinking skills and show us that you are making good choices, right? And so a child being easily lured into a chat room, for example, or maybe being bombarded by their best friend's mental health problems, feeling like they're the only person that's there for their friend and they can't share that with anybody, those are not good choices. Those are instances when you can have a learning opportunity and talk to your kids about, well, you know, these are things that you should probably share with us, and it's okay, and we're going to approach you in a non-judgmental way, and we're going to get through this together.
Yeah, and then we, you know, when our kids are, you know, growing up very young, you know, 1 and 2 and 3 years old, what's the one of the most important things we teach them? Don't talk to strangers. But yet as they get older and get on these devices, we don't have any boundaries with that at all in a lot of different ways. And we talked about last week about modeling as well. And some of our Facebook pages, you know, we have 3,000 friends and we don't know, you know, 95% of them. What is that modeling? And we're sharing all types of pictures and all kinds of things with, you know, with friends on Facebook. But, you know, so modeling is also very important.
Right. And so, you know, when you talk about modeling, I always think about, and I didn't say this last week, but I want to say it today. Modeling is not just about not using devices. It's also about saying no. So if someone wants to take your picture, it's okay to say no. If someone says, you know, I'm on FaceTime with my friend, come get in this, you know, it's like, no, I'd rather you not walk around my house with your friend on the phone the whole time. That's kind of weird, right? So it's okay to speak up and say no, because the more and more you're doing that, the more and more you'll notice your kids saying, no, don't take my picture, or no, I don't really want that right now. And the sooner we can get them saying no and being okay with being unplugged, I think the more change we're going to see over time.
Yeah, and it's important to understand that kids really, especially like middle school and high school kids, but even elementary kids these days with Snapchat and whatnot, they have the impression that when they post a picture, it disappears automatically, and that's not actually true.
Right.
And there is a thumbnail that can be found and whatnot. And what kind of
digital footprint, right?
Yeah. So, we've seen that with our 17-year-old, just with Snapchat and whatnot. Kids are sharing things these days with anybody. They're experimenting. They don't know how to communicate because everything they do is through technology. So they don't know how to socialize. And so they're experimenting in ways that we would never even think imaginable when we were growing up in middle school and high school.
Well, and so because you said that, I always like one of the tips I like to give to parents is don't ever assume anything, right? So the only thing that's obvious these days is that nothing is obvious anymore. Okay. So you can't even imagine the things your kids are talking about or exploring online. And that means you can't assume that they would just know better, right? Because when we hear stories about what happens, like, oh my goodness, that young girl gave out her address. Why would she do that? Doesn't she have any common sense? Well, the answer is no, nothing is obvious.
What are her parents thinking?
Right. And you can easily judge and blame the parents. Didn't they talk to her about that? Well, no, a lot of parents don't even think to talk about that kind of stuff. And so that's why we do episodes like this, because we're trying to build awareness and say, these are the kinds of things that we need to sit down and talk to our kids about regularly, okay? So just some real practical tips, best practices for how to monitor your child.
First, and real quick, I want to give a really quick example. So as a coach, coaching one of my baseball teams a few years ago, I think the kids were probably 12 years old. So in the very beginning of the year, I would have them do this evaluation form they would do for themselves at this age. So basically kind of what their best, what their strongest suits are, you know, in baseball. What are their weakest links in baseball? What do they want to work on? What position do they currently play? What position would they like to play? Just kind of an overview to see kind of where they're at, really what their goals are. And then I would say, what is the biggest thing you want to accomplish this year? And of course, it's for baseball, right? So one of my kids, and he went to a private school, really good family, and cute little kid. He's like, I want to learn how to talk to girls. That's what he wrote down. So when I'm actually doing his review with him at the next practice, I said, oh, okay, so you want to learn how to talk to girls. That was what was on his mind. Now, I want you guys, everyone, to understand, too, that these forms were being filled out at practice on the baseball field, okay? It wasn't like they took it home and he was in some other mindset. On the baseball field, he was thinking about, I want to learn how to talk to girls. And these kind of things go on with kids in all different kinds of ways. So, and again, a really good family, private school, really well-to-do. And again, there's nothing wrong with thinking that as a young boy either, but kids are having these thoughts all the time these days, and they're going to the web and social media platforms and whatnot, and they're trying to find the answers.
Yeah, that is a beautiful example. So I'm glad you shared that. So that, you know, again, nothing's obvious. We don't really know what they're thinking about, that we don't know what the goals are or what their intentions are when they do the things that they do, because we can't make any assumptions. So we have to get to know our kids. We have to be curious. We have to take that step back and just learn about them. And the only way we can do that is to ask questions like, what's the biggest thing on your mind right now? What are you thinking about? What do you want to accomplish? You know, things like that. If you have more and more conversations like that with your child, open-ended questions, just really learning about who they are. Pretend you're in an interview or something and you're doing that with your child. It will set you up to have a more open and trusting relationship with them. So again, best practices, right? So number one, there's no such thing as privacy. Okay, let's just eliminate that as a concern. Let's not feel bad for invading our kids' privacy, because we know that we need to do what we can to keep them safe. And remember back in the day when you were on the phone and your little brother or sister would come and ambush you, and there was no such thing as privacy back then either. So when it comes to phones and devices, the rule still stands, okay? I want all parents to have all the passwords on any electronic device. So the kids need to be made aware that, hey, I need to know your password at all times. And if at any time this password changes, you know, we have something that we need to talk about, because you didn't tell me about that. And there's a discussion that needs to be had.
Well, and with that being said, also, one thing that we have that we see with kids is that they're entitled. It's their phone and this is my phone and whatnot. And we just need to be very clear in the very beginning. First of all, let's determine when a kid's going to get a phone or a device and the use behind that. Let's just be proactive. So for parents that have really young kids who don't have devices yet and whatnot, decide, talk about it, figure it out now, what age you're going to allow it, and stick to that. And then once they do get the device, what's going to be the actual boundaries around that device, and start that in the very beginning before the device is even given to the child. You know, because we're going to have a lot of parents, kids are today are always talking about, well, Susie has one, Johnny has one, why can't I have one, right? And it's a really big discussion. So decide that early on.
Yeah, so be proactive, right? I love that. So have that conversation, you know, think through it. And talk to each other as parents about that beforehand so you can present as united front at all times.
And this is not your device. I pay for it. I'm paying the phone bill.
Well, don't say that because I will tell you that will shut kids down, okay?
I understand.
Know we want to say that so bad and we feel so, you know, just strong about that and convicted about that.
The bottom line is you are the parent. It is your job to really help your kid, you know, really make the best decisions.
Right. And the more and more we sound like we're lecturing our kids, the more and more we lose them. So we really want to keep everything as an open conversation. You know, like we're learning about you. We want to help you. We love you. And we want you to get there. We want you to have independence. Having all passwords to any games, chats, or social media accounts is another best practice when it comes to monitoring your child. Regularly logging into their accounts and checking private messages is really important. And letting your kids know, like, this is what it's going to be like. If you're using your computer or you're using this cell phone or tablet, these are the guidelines. Otherwise, it's a game stopper, right? Discuss safe practices and potential dangers of social media before a child has access to it. So making sure that, you know, you are talking to your child about predators, about scary things that they might come across, how to listen to their gut when they might see something inappropriate or feel like something doesn't feel right. We have to help our kids listen to their intuition and trust that. Our feelings are so, so useful when we know how to pay attention to them and we understand what they mean. So when we feel like something's a little creepy or a little off, encourage your child to go with that and say something about it. The training wheels example really is starting with really tight restrictions and then loosening them over time. So my example or my kind of go-to is when it comes to technology and cell phones, I really try to recommend for all the families I work with is that the tight restrictions need to be in place until at least 10th or 11th grade. And the reason for that is because every life experience your child has, the older and older they get, is going to be a new experience for them. And they need parents to help guide them through it. And so if you kind of set it up that they're getting used to openly talking about what they're doing on their device, showing you the conversations they're having with their friends, and it's just the way things are, then in 10th and 11th grade, when they're starting to hit some of those stumbles and there's really, you know, interesting peer interactions that are occurring and concerning things that might pop up, they feel no different going to you and talking to you about them.
Well, and let's also be real. When we were growing up, I mean, obviously my mom and dad, they talked to me about a bunch of different things. And I remember, you know, a friend of mine finding a Hustler magazine or something that was something that I already knew was something I shouldn't look at and whatnot. And so I already knew. So when we're having those conversations at a very young age and going through those and having those restrictions and guidelines and monitoring going on, we as kids learn what's right and wrong because we're being taught by our parents. And so if we don't have those restrictions and guidelines, we're going to be taught by somebody else, as we talked about earlier. Friends are going to show us something. So it's a lot easier to say no when you know your parents wouldn't approve of it. You know, no, my mom and dad wouldn't let me do that, or they wouldn't think it's appropriate and whatnot. It's a lot easier when those conversations have been had and that structure has been in place.
Right. Yes. And that's a really great example. So not being afraid to go there and talk to your kids about that and then give them permission to blame it on your mom and dad. You know, when all else fails, just blame it on your parents.
Yeah, and we actually go a little bit further. I mean, one thing that we talk about our kids and I do with our 17-year-old all the time is that, you know, you can blame it on Jesus.
Yeah,
you
know, it's God. Well, he wouldn't want that. He wouldn't want me to do that. So I'm gonna remove myself from this situation, right? So I give the recommendation sophomore or junior year because then once your child gets into senior year, that's the year where you kind of let them fall and see how they do with picking themselves up. Because now they've had all this practice, you've been there along the way, you've been there to kind of help them pick up all the pieces. Senior year is kind of when you let them really start doing it themselves. And the reason for that is because the trust, the foundation has been established. They now know, because over the years it's been this way, where you've shown them anytime they need you, they can come running back, right? But you also want to let them go just enough so they can experience what it's like to fall down and have to pick themselves up on their own with all the skills and real life experiences that you all have experienced together. The reason for that is because then it's a beautiful setup for college. Now they've had a whole year of practicing this on, you know, by themselves. And if they are going to go out, they move out, they go to college, they go get a job, whatever it is, they are able to now understand what it's like to have boundaries and to put them in place, to really know how to be unplugged, to understand internet safety, to understand, does this feel good to me? Do I have a gut instinct here? I'm going to go ahead and listen to that. Because all along the way, up until, you know, the second or third year of high school, you were there doing it with them. So that's really my recommendations. Now, that's in, like, the perfect world. You started early when your child was just a baby and all of that. What are you supposed to do when your child's already a teenager and they're struggling with an addiction, right? And so we talked about that a little bit last week, that we don't actually want to just rip it away from them. We want to be very, very careful about how we start putting those boundaries in place. And so, you know, before I go into that, I want to give another couple of examples of, or another couple tips of just, you know, making sure you're following your kid on social media. That's another way to monitor them. And then also doing the research. So every 3 or 4 months, I recommend that parents jump onto different websites and do some research to find out what the new apps are, what the new threats are, what the updates are. And so one of the best sources out there that I can recommend is called internetsafety101.org. If you go to that website, it's pretty up to date. And it has so much information about all the things that parents should be thinking about when it comes to what they need to know about technology and how to protect their children. So it's internetsafety101.org.
And real quick, when you go to some of these websites, there's so much information out there that as a parent, now all of a sudden we know all these fears and threats are out there and whatnot, and so we're definitely concerned about our kids. We want to get everything in place now and whatnot. Just know there's a lot of information out there. You could spend days, weeks, months reading through all this stuff. So just start somewhere and start making some changes, you know, is going to be the best way to get started.
Yeah, and like, don't be overwhelmed. And of course, if you are, you can always call us. I mean, my office deals with this kind of stuff all the time. And especially when you've realized that you do have a child who is addicted to technology, it's actually something I don't recommend that you try to intervene on all on your own. At that point, I do recommend that you get a professional involved, you get an assessment, and then you get some help doing that. Because like I said, it's not recommended to just rip that away and to put all these rules in place all of a sudden and to try to establish monitoring your child if it's not something you've ever done before. There needs to be some real specific steps that are taken to be able to put those processes in place. The good news is you can put them in place. You know, there's always room to improve. There's always ways to kind of undo the damage because kids are young, they're resilient, and it's not too late. So if you do feel like your child is addicted, that's what I'm going to say. Go ahead and get a professional involved so that we're not doing anything too drastic too soon.
Yeah, and then another thing as far as monitoring is doing device checks.
Right.
And doing them randomly, not, you know, every night at 5:30 because kids are cleaning the phones off and whatnot. And there's apps that hide stuff, too, just in case you didn't know. But doing random device checks. And when you do this, parents, a little tip, take the phone or device away from the kid, even the computer, and go off into your own bedroom on your own time and do it without your kid being present. Because if some of this stuff has been out of control for a while and they've been on their own for a while, you may be very surprised what you see, and you don't want your kid to see the reaction on your face and your demeanor when you see some of these things, because some of them can be really, really hard to deal with. And so again, do that in a private place, collect your thoughts, figure out how you really want to address it so you're not exploding on them as well. And then utilize this again, because there's gonna be a lot of parents out there, use this as a really great opportunity to talk to your kids about some real life stuff, and even admit to them that you have really kind of failed in some ways to really, you know, help them along some areas. It's not going to be all their fault, honestly. So
I'm so glad you said that, because what do you do when you find out what your child has been up to, right? this is not about getting your child in trouble. It's about, like you said, taking responsibility for the fact that maybe you as the parent weren't doing what you should have been doing as well when it comes to monitoring them. So having that conversation, look, I haven't been able to be as involved as I wanted to be. Or some information has come to light that I've realized I need to be more involved. And so there are going to be some changes. It's not because I don't trust you. It's actually because I'm trying to be a responsible parent and I want to take care of you, right? Yeah, and it's because I love you. And so you're not in trouble, right? There's things here that have happened that I wish never happened. And so now we know it's an issue. How are we going to move forward together?
And these are definitely great learning experiences for both parents and kids. And I'm going to tell you right now that if you haven't done any advice checks in a long time or ever, your kid's going to be very, very concerned and worried whenever you take that device without having it being, you know, without being planned and whatnot. And that should also tell you also that there's something going on. But kids really want to do they want to do good things and whatnot. So these are times that we can actually utilize to a great advantage for learning. And then for parents who have been doing these type of things and whatnot, just understand that kids will make some mistakes at times. That's okay. That's how we learn.
Yep. And that's it for today.
Sounds great. Well, thank you for tuning in to the Parent Survival Kit Unplugged podcast. So we look forward to seeing you guys next week for episode 3, the final episode, as we talk about cyberbullying and sexting. If you have comments or questions or concerns, if you have situations you want to talk about, definitely leave some comments below. We'd love to hear from all of our listeners and respond to those. And some of the thoughts that you may have may be one of our next episodes. If you enjoyed the podcast today, also subscribe. These are weekly. We have great topics, and we look forward to seeing you next week. Thanks so much.